Chapter 28. Talfalio lay dead center in Han's cockpit display, a point of fire just 3 light-years distant. That meant the light in his eye had been created 3 standard years ago, before the Jedi had become an endangered species and the Yuuzhan Vong had pulled a moon down on Chewbacca. Though seldom one to live in the past, Han would have given his life to ride that orange ray back to its birth, to add one more being to the thousands he had saved on Cernpadal that day. He no longer blamed himself or anyone else for the Wookiee's death, and he was even past wishing he had never tried to rescue anyone in the first place. He only wanted his friend back. He only wanted a galaxy safer for his children than it had been for him. A galaxy where a man and wife could go to sleep at night reasonably sure the world would still be there at dawn. Some things were too much to ask. Leia, who had been curled up in the Falcon's Wookiee-sized co-pilot seat, opened her eyes and sat up straight. There was no grogginess or confusion to her actions. She had not slept, not really, since Anakin's strike team had departed for Mirker. Neither had Han, for that matter. She slipped her crash webbing over her shoulders and began to cinch it down. Han activated a self-test routine to warm the Falcon's circuits. "What's happening? You sent something from Luke?" "Not from Luke." Leia closed her eyes, reaching for her children in a way Han could never share. "Anakin and the twins. They're in the middle of it now, something dangerous." She paused, then added, "I think our turn will come soon." Han started to activate the intercom, then recalled who would be manning his guns and looked over his shoulder. As expected, the Nogri were standing quietly in the back of the cockpit. "Take the turrets, and tell C-3PO to lock himself down," he said. "We're helping Lando and the Wild Knights with the Yamask hunt, so when Corran sends us in, it'll be hot." The two Nogri dipped their heads and retreated down the corridor. Han watched them go, a little unnerved by the shadow that came to their black eyes whenever combat was at hand, but still grateful for their presence. Over the last 15 years, the Nogri had saved Leia's life uncounted times and rarely left her unprotected, which was more than he could say for himself. He still found it hard to understand what had come over him after Chewbacca died, why mourning his friend's loss had meant withdrawing from Leia and the kids. "Remind me to thank those guys," he said. "You have," Leia said, "at least 12 times. Han gave her a crooked smile. "Yeah, but they never say you're welcome." For the first time in days, Leia laughed. Then Corran Horn's voice came over the comm speaker. "Time to wake up, people. Outlying sensors show a Yuuzhan Vong assault fleet moving into the Talfalio system." Leia stretched over and armed the depressurization safety on Han's combat suit.
"I'm scared, Han."
"Me too." Han reached across and lowered her flash visor. "But what can you do? They're adults now. They get to pick their own fights." Eclipse had managed to put pilots in 50 of its new XJ-3 X-Wings, and over half of them were Jedi. Another 24 Jedi were operating blast boats and other support craft. Given that Luke was risking half the galaxy's Jedi and most of its masters on a single operation, he should probably have been nervous. He was not. The Force was with them in a way he had never before experienced, a presence so tangible he could almost see it shimmering against the velvet starlight.
"Not too calm, Skywalker."
Mara's voice was so clear in Luke's mind that it took him an instant to realize that she had not spoken over a comm channel. He glanced at her X-Wing, floating close enough that their S-foils almost touched. He wanted to tell her there was nothing to worry about, that Ben would be losing no parents today, but such a thought would have implied a vision of the outcome he had deliberately avoided seeking. If the Force wanted to show him the future, fine. If not, it was better to trust it and take what came. Whatever that was, making this attack was the right thing. He could feel it.
So can I, Mara added.
Luke raised a brow. Through their bond, each could usually sense what the other was feeling. And it was not even uncommon for them to receive short, semi-articulated thoughts. But this was something new. Luke's contemplations had barely risen to the level of consciousness when Mara sensed them. Perhaps the presence of so many powerful Jedi was gathering the Force, drawing it together in the same way a cloud of gas became a star.
More like a lens gathering light, Mara said. The effect of so many Jedi concentrating on a common purpose. This is really something.
Luke added a long thought question to test the limits of their mental link. When his only reply was an impression of curiosity, he asked aloud,
I wonder if the old Jedi councils focused the Force like this. It certainly would have helped them see clearly, but it might have had its drawbacks.
Luke sensed an uncommon moment of embarrassment in his wife, as Mara's mind flashed from the cognitive union they were experiencing to a more physical kind, and he found himself sharing in her hope that nobody else was picking up the connection. If they were, they had the good sense not to say so. Smiling both inwardly and outwardly, Luke glanced at his tactical display and saw the enemy assault fleet lumbering into the Talfalio system. The deliberate approach, he suspected, had less to do with a fear of space mines or ambushes than allowing the hostages plenty of time to contemplate their doom. There were 4 cruiser analogs, a warship analog, a skip carrier, and 20 frigates. The carrier would have at least 200 coral skippers, and the 5 largest vessels would have their own squadrons as well.
Ouch, Mara thought.
Luke was not worried. The Jedi were there to break the blockade and buy the refugee convoy time to escape, not destroy the fleet. There was one aspect of the mission that would need rethinking, however. He asked R2-D2 for an open channel.
This is Farm Boy.
His call sign had been picked by Mara. Operation Safe Passage is still a go, but there are too many hostiles for the Yamask action. Repeat. Yamask action is...
Hold a moment, Farm Boy, Corrin said.
As the Jedi battle controller, he was aboard the Wild Knight's freighter, Jolly Man, using a new subspace eavesdropping suite to monitor the Talfalian sensors.
We have company exiting hyperspace.
Company? Luke's heart did not sink. There was nothing in the Force to suggest an ambush.
Who?
An old rogue, the familiar voice of Wedge Antilles said, and an old rebel. Though this voice was also familiar, Luke did not recognize it until R2-D2 ran a scan analysis and identified it as that of General Garm Bel Iblis. Luke switched his tactical display to local space and saw a pair of unfamiliar Star Destroyers. The transponder identified them as the Mon Mothma and the Allegos Akla. Moving into position behind his fleet. Accompanied by a cruiser and 2 frigates each, both ships were bleeding squadrons of XJ-3 X-Wings and Series 4 E-Wings into space.
Gentlemen, welcome, Luke calmed. But if you don't mind my asking,
we just happened by on a shakedown cruise, Bel Iblis said, cutting him off.
So close to Talfalio?
This from Mara, whose years in Palpatine's service had given her a deep distrust of unanticipated gifts.
I don't think so.
An old employer of yours recommended the route, Wedge said. He was referring to the infamous Talon Card, one-time smuggling king information broker and sometime intelligence agent. No one ever knew exactly what Talon Card was up to. He seemed to think we would have a chance to test some new weapons.
That you might.
Luke did not bother to ask how Card had learned the timing and location of their operation. Card always protected his sources.
Control will fill you in on the plan.
Card already has,
Felibus said. We thought we'd let you punch through ahead, then take crossfire positions to either side of the escape corridor. We'd assume lead, but we're not sure how well this new stuff is going to work. And this is a Jedi operation. Luke finished, reading between the lines. Someone wanted to improve their image on the news vids. Thanks. We'd be willing to detach a squadron to support the Wild Knights on their mission. Say, Rogue? Wedge offered. We want to keep them off the net anyway.
Though Luke's bond with his sister Leia was not as strong as the one with Mara, it was more than potent enough for him to sense her suspicion. The whole thing was beginning to stink of Borsk Felia's influence, which automatically raised the question of what the chief wanted in return, and of who else he might have told about their plans. A simple battle was beginning to look very complicated, but Wedge's offer was too generous to refuse.
Hisser, what do you think? Luke asked. Still want to try for that Yamask?
By all means, Saba replied. It would be an honor to hunt with Colonel Darklighter.
You two work out the details, Luke said. Everyone else, double-check your jump coordinates and blast anything that looks like a rock. On your mark, Control.
Broadcasting escape route coordinates to Talfalio now, Corrin said. Dozen squadron, jump on my mark. 3, 2, mark.
Kip's dozen shot forward in a flash of blue efflux, then vanished into hyperspace. Luke switched his tactical screen back to Talfalio local, and watched as, a minute later, the squadron appeared in system and streaked toward the yellow shell of Yuuzhan Vong blips, trapping the refugee fleet in orbit. At the far edge of the system, the enemy assault fleet began spreading into attack formation and accelerated, no doubt preparing to make a hyperspace micro-jump toward the planet. The Talfalian gravity well would prevent them from jumping directly into battle, but Luke knew Corrin would need to time their own fleet's arrival carefully. As the dozen drew near the blockade, Kip pulled his squadron in tight and angled for the light cruiser. Half a dozen Corvette analogs left their blockade posts to defend the larger ship, and long tongues of plasma began to arc out from the cruiser itself. The dozen merged into a single blip and continued forward, jinking and juking as one. The pilots weaving in front of each other to keep a fresh pair of shields always facing the enemy. Kip's squadron began to pour blue lines of laser fire into the light cruiser. More enemy corvettes accelerated toward the dozen, abandoning their blockade stations. So far, so good. The Yuuzhan Vong seemed to think this was another rogue operation, a desperate attempt to save the doomed refugees. A pair of proton torpedoes flashed away from the dozen and vanished, swallowed by the cruiser's shielding system. There followed another exchange of laser bolts and plasma balls, then an unexpected spray of static as a Jedi shadow bomb exploded. Basically a variation on the tactic Kip used to slip his proton torpedoes past enemy shielding crews. Shadow bombs were proton torpedoes, drained of propellant and packed with beradium instead. They were armed with standard proximity fuses and guided to their targets using the Force. The weapons were far more powerful than a standard torpedo, difficult to detect in the heat of battle, and just one of the new tricks in the Jedi arsenal. Kip's squadron finished off the cruiser with a pair of standard proton torpedoes, then raced through the debris and swung around as though preparing the escape route. A steady flow of refugee vessels began to leave orbit and streamed toward the flight corridor. It did not take long for the blockade to collapse inward, as Yuuzhan Vong picket ships rushed to respond.
Control, time to swing the hammer, Luke calmed.
Concur, farm boy.
Corrin actually sounded as though he were cringing when he spoke the call sign.
New Republic Task Force, Shockers and Sabers, jump to preassigned coordinates on my mark.
The Saber Squadron was Luke's personal squadron. It consisted of himself, Mara, 7 non-Jedi veterans, and half a dozen newly trained Jedi pilots. Their assignment was to fly cover while the more experienced Shockers drove off the assault fleet.
3, 2, mark.
Luke jammed his accelerator forward and watched the stars stretch into lines.
"Be careful, kid," Han calmed. "We just finished raising 3 Jedi. We don't need you sticking us with another one."
"Han, that's..." Tafalio's orange point vanished into the colorless blur of hyperspace, and Leia's rebuke was lost to the jump blackout. Luke was aware of Mara beside him, calmly running through last-minute systems checks to keep her circuits warm and her attention focused on the coming battle. There had been no need to discuss the wisdom of flying into combat together. They were a team in a way that even Han and Leia could never understand, and they had seen many times before that each was far more likely to survive with the other present. The blur of hyperspace dissolved into starlines, and Talfalio appeared outside Luke's canopy, a small orangish crescent hanging alongside the brilliant disk of the system's crimson sun. Though the flotilla had jumped as close as they dared to the gravity well, the battle remained a tiny web of laser bolts and plasma trails hanging in the darkness between them and the planet. The enemy assault fleet was not yet visible to the naked eye, but Luke found it quickly enough on his tactical display. It had already made its micro-jump, and was now on the other side of the blockade, directly opposite the Jedi flotilla, vectoring toward the escape corridor. Rigard Mattel led his shockers toward the blockade at nearlight, a favorite assault tactic that had earned the squadron its name. The sabers shed just enough velocity to assume their cover position. The tactical display showed the New Republic Star Destroyers decelerating alongside the escape corridor in staggered positions, each retaining an escort of a single frigate and 2 squadrons of short-range starfighters. The rest of their flotilla streaked toward Talfalio, behind the sabers. In Luke's canopy, the battle swelled quickly from a tiny web into a moon-sized snarl of plasma trails and laser flashes. The blockade ships were still constricting around Kip's dozen, pouring fire in on the squadron from every direction. The dozen bounced back and forth inside the sphere, sharing shields and reserving their laser fire for Grutchens and magma missiles. There were only 9 X-wings visible, but when Luke stretched out with the Force, he felt all 3 missing pilots scattered throughout the battle area, alone and frightened and no doubt in EV suits. He had R2-D2 send a message to the recovery team and tried not to think about what would happen if they were struck by a stray plasma ball or efflux tail. The nearest blockade ships peeled off to meet the shockers, who launched a flurry of proton torpedoes and continued forward. The weapons reached their targets almost the instant they were launched. A pair of corvettes broke apart when their shielding crews missed incoming torpedoes. 8 more began to vent bodies and atmosphere when the proximity fuses detonated close to their hulls. Then the shockers were through, streaking past Kip's dozen toward the opposite side of the collapsing blockade. Luke led his squadron into the hole behind the shockers. They did not waste energy expanding their inertial compensators. The corvettes' Dovin basals were more than strong enough to rip their shields. When a pair of corvettes rushed to block their way, Luke dropped a shadow bomb. They were flying too fast to lock their S-foils into firing position, and used the Force to hurl it into the second vessel. There was no need to assign the first to Mara. He knew she would take it with the same tactic. An instant later, simultaneous proton detonations broke the spines of both ships. "Wow," Mara sent. A corvette's Dovin basal caught Luke's shields. Warning alarms filled the cockpit. Mara slid her fighter over his to protect him for the instant it took R2-D2 to activate the backup charge. The third member of their shielding trio, the young Tam Azerjamin, blasted the attacker with his own shadow bomb. "Thanks, Quiet," Luke calmed. Tam clicked his transmitter, a garrulous reply for the reticent Jedi, and then they were crossing the kill zone where Kip had been trapped. Dozens of refugee ships were already lumbering up from Talfalio, in their haste to escape, willing to brave even the heart of the fighting. Still moving at a substantial percentage of light speed, the sabers flashed past a trio of 12 X-wings. Kipteron's excited voice came over the tactical net. "Right behind you, farm boy." "Neg that, headhunter," Luke ordered. If Kip realized he had 3 pilots EV, there was no trace of it in his tone.
You're already down three. Stay here and cover refugees. Cover? But we're the most experienced headhunter. Luke said in a stern voice, You have your orders. There was a moment of silence. Then?
Copy.
Kip's resentment lingered in the force like the aftersmell of a bad blaster burn. Luke was troubled by the continued lack of compassion. If Kip was ever going to... Skywalker. Mara's thought was a shout inside Luke's head. The battle? Sorry. Something inside Luke suggested dropping three shadow bombs. He did. He had given himself over to the force completely, and the battle seemed to drop into slow motion. A trio of black faceted corvettes drifted in from different angles, filling space with magma missiles and drutchens. Luke continued to fly straight and sensed a question rising in the back of Mara's mind, then felt it change to approval when he reached out with the force and nudged the nearest magma missile into a Grutchen. Luke perceived a sudden need for forward protection and ordered R2-D2 to shift all shielding power to the front. A tiny red speck blossomed from the nose nodule of the closest corvette and, at the squadron's closing speed, flowered almost instantly into a plasma ball. Finding his view blocked, Luke closed his eyes and reached out to the rest of his squadron, using his perceptions to guide his shadow bombs home. He saw the blinding flash of his detonating weapons through their eyes, then felt his X-wing buck as the enemy plasma ball erupted against its forward shields. There came a surge of trepidation from the Mara place in the center of his heart, followed almost instantly by a sharp sense of reproach. Next time, jink. R2-D2 whistled a warning and shut down the overloaded shield generator to begin an emergency cool-off. Luke eased between Mara and Tam, more for his wife's peace of mind than his own. The way he was feeling today, he could have continued without shields. They passed through a field of drifting corvette hulks. Luke was not the only one in his squadron to claim a picket ship. And were through the blockade, following the shockers past Talfalio. The enemy assault fleet moved its frigates forward to form a defensive screen, but continued to withhold its coral skippers, determined to reach the escape corridor before stopping to do battle. With eight New Republic starfighter squadrons, two cruisers, and a pair of frigates close behind him, Luke carried the battle to the enemy and called for long-range fire support. The New Republic cruisers and frigates laced the darkness with turbolaser flashes. The enemy answered with plasma balls and magma missiles. The Jedi squadrons continued forward, relying on flying ability, danger sense, and shield-weaving to twine their way through the fiery mesh. A pair of shockers turned back when they were damaged by near hits. One of Luke's pilots lost an S-foil to a Grutchen and went EV. The shockers punched through the frigate screen. Rigard Mattel's X-wing vanished in a ball of fire. The shocker's formation disintegrated into a confused swarm of ion trails as the dazed pilots contemplated the loss of their veteran leader. Luke extended himself into the heart of the fireball and experienced a moment of unbearable prickling, then a strange sense of calm familiarity. He focused on the calmness just long enough to confirm that it was what he thought. Rigard had survived the hit and gone EV. Before Luke could pass on the good news, Rigard's static-laden voice crackled over the emergency channel. "Tighten up, shockers!" He sounded pained but confident. "You're embarrassing." His voice trailed off into sizzle as the assault passed beyond the limited range of his suit's comm unit. But the chastened shockers formed themselves into three shield trios and continued forward. The Force was truly with them today. So far, the Jedi had lost no one. The heart of the Yuuzhan Vong assault fleet lay before them now, half a dozen Yorick coral pebbles gleaming in the light of Talfalio's crimson sun. The skip carrier and one of the cruisers were slipping behind the warship analog, while the other three cruisers moved out front and began to deploy skip squadrons. Luke had R2-D2 send the coordinates of the Shy cruiser to the Star Destroyers for a subspace relay back to Saba, then opened a channel to both the Sabres and Shockers. Forget this, Gibbs. Expand your inertial compensators to full and comet right past them. What we want is the carrier.
Of all the ships in the assault fleet, the skip carrier was the most dangerous to the refugee convoy, and to their friends from the New Republic.
We'll make it look like we're going after the cruiser on the left, then launch everything we have the moment we have a clear angle to the real target.
By the time both squadrons acknowledged, the cruisers had swelled to arm-length lozenges of scabrous black York coral. Plasma balls streaked past or blossomed against the shields of the leapfrogging X-wings, and the tiny nuggets of the first distant skips glinted in the flashing battle light.
"Split by trios," Luke ordered. "Do what you can to save your shields."
The first handful of coral skippers streaked into range, spitting plasma and grabbing at shields. One pair vanished when they crossed their own cruiser's firing lane, then the X-wings were past the initial wave, still traveling at near light, and moving too fast for the skips to turn and follow. The Shockers angled toward the cruiser on the left. The Eugen von Captain put his ship into a tight turn, trying desperately to bring his flank around to present the maximum number of shielding Doven basals and weapons nodules. R2-D2 informed Luke they had reached maximum proton torpedo range to the skip carrier, but the warship analog was keeping its bulk between them and the target. The cruiser's flank weapons began to open up, filling the darkness with clouds of white energy and spiraling streaks of fire.
"All trios, break formation," Luke ordered.
He jinked right, checked his tactical display, found the warship still shielding the skip carrier, and the skip carrier slipping past toward the escape corridor. Luke ground his teeth in frustration, then sensed the butt of an idea forming in Mara's mind.
"Go ahead, Mother."
"All pilots, target cruiser," she commanded. "Fire all proton torpedoes and break for safety."
"Luke, with me."
"Repeat. Target cruiser and fire all proton torpedoes." In the instant of hesitation that followed Mara's command, a Gretchen caught a Shocker X-wing and began to devour the wing. The veteran pilot popped the canopy and went EV, and the starfighter exploded.
"Now," Mara growled.
Blue tails of ion efflux crisscrossed in front of the cruiser as dozens of torpedoes streaked toward their target. A line of shielding singularities appeared along the flank and began to devour the proton torpedoes, but it was instantly clear the vessel's defenses would be overwhelmed. A long tail of what appeared to be white flame appeared behind one of Mara's engines, then her X-wing spiraled out of the battle plane. Luke followed, experiencing the barest instant of worry until he felt her drawing on the force and realized what she was doing.
"Nice trick."
This came not from Luke, but from Tam, still maintaining the shield trio.
"Learn that from Ezol?"
"Yes," Mara replied. She was a little shaken, Luke sensed, by the idea that Tam was also sharing in their thoughts.
"How long have you been eavesdropping?"
Tam responded with a mental shrug. "Wasn't trying. A young navigator turned fighter pilot, the Duros father, the Jedi Day Azerjaman, had vanished on Nalhutta a year earlier, and since then Tam had been having trouble shutting other people's thoughts out of his mind.
You two have just been sort of shouting."
The exchange took only as long as it required the squadron's fusillade of proton torpedoes to hit the cruiser and detonate. A brilliant light flared above and behind the trio, and Luke's tactical display danced with static as R2-D2 struggled with the electromagnetic pulse. The force glow trailing from Mara's engines flashed into a fire-like ball that engulfed all three X-wings. "Okay, boys, shut down your sublights." Luke was already flipping the switch, and drawing an alarmed whistle from R2-D2.
"It's okay, R2. He flipped the toggle. "This is part of Mara's plan."
R2-D2 tweedled sharply. Luke checked the readout.
"Of course you didn't hear the plan," he explained. "It didn't come over a comm channel."
R2-D2 trilled in doubt. Trust me, R2, there is a plan.
Time for a little lifting, Mara calmed. Follow along.
Luke felt Mara gathering the force in, then saw her unpowered X-wing rise slowly out of the light ball. He lifted his own craft after hers and glanced back to see Tam doing the same. Mara let the glowing sphere spiral off. When they still did not draw any Yuuzhan Vong fire, she dispelled it in a final flash of brilliant light. Luke looked up and saw they were less than 1,000 meters beneath the skip carrier's spindly-armed form. A full squadron of skips still hung from each of its 15 arms, and the big warship analog was out in front, paying no attention at all to their dark ships. Luke started to congratulate Mara on her strategy, but she cut him off.
What did you expect, Skywalker? Subterfuge is my specialty.
R2-D2 trilled urgently and displayed a warning about non-optical sensors.
I know they can still detect us, Luke answered, but they're going to be confused for a second, and a second's all we need.
Mara dropped her shadow bombs, then used the force to send them sailing up toward the heart of the monstrous ship. Tams were close behind. Luke was still launching his when the first explosion erupted from the carrier's central disk. Danny rose into her crash webbing. Fighting to keep breakfast where it belonged, she wondered if the blast boat's overhaul had been a good thing. With every seam re-welded by the maintenance droids on Eclipse, and the frame inspected by certified space techs, Wonton thought he could fly it like the squadron's new X-wings, and he still insisted on keeping the inertial compensator dialed down to 92%. The Brub swung into a vectored thrust turn so tight the blood pooled in Danny's fingertips. She had to squeeze her eyes shut to keep them in their sockets. A bad thing, she decided. Something popped in the systems bilge beneath her feet. Definitely a bad thing. A distant flash shone through the forward viewport. Danny looked and saw the white spheres of 3 proton detonations winking back into nothingness. The Wild Knights had emerged from hyperspace far above Talfalio's orbital plane and rolled into an inverted nose drop, so she had the sensation of diving down toward the battle. Another proton explosion lit the darkness, vaping the central disk of the big skip carrier. The vessel's arms spun off into space. Burning coral skippers tumbled in every direction.
Ah, Master Skywalker, he is enjoying his hunt.
Saba activated a targeting reticle and slid it across the transperisteel viewport to a Yuuzhan Vong cruiser trailing behind the debris.
There is the Shy vessel, Danny. See if it has what we want.
Danny linked her sensors to the reticle. 12 gravity arrows leapt to life and began dancing to the enemy code.
Affirmative, she said. That ship has a Yamask.
Not for long.
Saba hissed uproariously, then transmitted the coordinates to the rogues and the rest of the Wild Knights.
There is our target. Be careful of her big hatchmate.
The enemy warship was just ahead of the Yamask cruiser, hurling an unending salvo of plasma balls and magma missiles at the New Republic flotilla, blocking its route to the escape corridor. Fortunately, the Mon Mothma and Alegos Akla had made short work of the Yuuzhan Vong blockade, and were dashing forward to support the other New Republic forces. A flurry of bouncing data bars drew Danny's eye back to her holo display.
They've seen us.
15 seed-shaped lumps of Yorick coral dropped off the enemy cruiser and angled up to meet them, and its weapons nodules began to spew plasma fire and magma missiles in their direction. Danny felt like they were flying into a star. Wonton put the blast boat into a wild corkscrew and followed the rest of the squadron into battle, and Izal Waz opened up with the big quad lasers. Danny grabbed the arms of her seat, trying to keep Wonton's wild gyrations from slamming her against her crash webbing. The gravity arrows in her holo display went wild.
Ready concussion missiles and decoys.
Ready.
The reply came from Han Solo's Millennium Falcon and Lando Calrissian's Lady Luck, flying behind the blaster boat above and below.
X-wings. Ready all torpedoes, Saba said. Target cruiser only. Ignore skips.
Wild Knights ready, Driftledge calmed. The communication was more for the rogue's sake than Saba's. With the force as thick as it was today, the Wild Knights could feel the readiness of their fellow pilots. The rogues had to rely on more conventional means.
Rogues ready, Gavin Darklighter confirmed.
Luke Skywalker's voice came over the tactical net. The Shockers and Sabers are regrouping below the cruiser. We are out of torpedoes, but we'll run interference when that warship starts shedding skips.
Our thanks, farm boy.
All of Danny's data bars dropped to near zero.
The Yamask has gone quiet.
She looked forward and saw the cruiser starting to bank around, trying to bring its flank to bear on the ships, jumping it from above. How it could have more weapons there than the ones firing at them from its top, Danny could not imagine.
Something's happening.
Yes, the warship is decelerating and dropping skips, One Ton added.
We have convinced them to stay and fight, Saba said.
She opened a channel to the tactical net.
Hisser here.
That's not it, Danny interrupted.
She closed her eyes, using a Jedi concentration technique to help her see the data, comprehend how it fit together. They were too close to Talfalio for a micro-jump, and with two Star Destroyers moving up to support the New Republic, the Yamask had to realize that any hope of punching through to the escape corridor was gone. She patched herself into the tactical net.
They're getting ready to micro-jump, away from the battle.
Saba turned one reptilian eye toward Danny.
Yuuzhan Vong, do not run.
Corrin Horn's concerned voice came over the tactical net. All units, break off, he ordered. The Jolly Man was far above the system's orbital plane, using its long-range sensors to monitor and coordinate the battle.
They're trying to string you out.
Give us a minute, Control, Wedge Antilles said. There's something we'd like to try.
Yes, sir. Please have your squadron launch its missiles.
Saba did not need to be told twice. She gave the order. The brilliant circles of 20 propellant tails flashed past, then multiplied into many times that number as the decoys deployed. The cruiser completed its turn and began to accelerate, and all of Danny's data bars shot to maximum. And the gravity arrows swung their bases toward the New Republic flotilla. The equipment popped and sizzled, then vented a plume of acrid smoke and went dead. Danny slapped the power cut off, though she knew by the smell of scorched circuits it was too late to save her processing boards, and turned to answer the question she sensed coming from Saba.
Gravity surge. Something overloaded it.
So it seems.
Saba curled her pebbly lips and sissed, then looked forward. With One Ton spiraling from one direction to another, the enemy cruiser was bouncing back and forth in the viewport. It had stopped firing and seemed to be pivoting around its bow. The first wave of missiles flashed past, their ion tails bending sharply as their guidance system struggled to adjust course. Danny thought it was some strange Yuuzhan Vong evasive tactic, until the second wave angled in unopposed and detonated into the hull.
"Disarm the missiles," Danny yelled.
She glanced at Saba's tactical display and saw the warship also spinning out of control.
"Disarm them now. We're going to vape our Yamask."
"You must be right about this,"
Saba warned, already transmitting the deactivation code,
"or this one will eat your arm."
Somehow, Danny did not think the Barabel was exaggerating.
"I am."
The cruiser broke into three pieces and began to vent bodies. The next wave of missiles curved in and struck the hull and did not explode, and Danny dared to breathe again. She opened a channel to the Mon Mothma.
"General Antilles, does one of your ships happen to be an interdictor?"
"That information would be classified," the reply came. "But it would be safe to assume that we were just waiting for them to micro-jump."
As General Antilles replied, the New Republic flotilla began to rain turbolaser blasts down on the helpless warship, softening it up before attempting to board. Luke and Mara and the rest of the Eclipse X-Wings swung away from the conflagration and headed back to help escort the refugee convoy safely out of the system. With their own target as helpless as the warship, One Ton flew a straighter course, and Han and Leia and Lando and Tendra came alongside in the Falcon and the Luck. Saba turned her chair to face Danny.
"Now we know why your equipment exploded."
Danny nodded. Interdiction technology was nothing new. The Imperials had used it during the rebellion to project artificial gravity wells in the midst of rebel fleets to prevent them from fleeing. What was new was that the new Star Destroyers lacked the telltale projector domes of most interdictor ships. By surprising the Yuuzhan Vong and timing their attack to coincide with the micro-jumps, they had put both enemy vessels out of control. Danny opened a channel to the Lady Luck.
"Gambler, can you send your droids into the cruiser now? I'd like to know if there's anything left of our Yamask."
After Lando acknowledged, Saba said to Danny,
"The Yamask will be there, you may be sure, Danny Kui. Flash frozen and ready to pack."
She slapped her knee and, sissing for some reason only a Barabel would understand, turned to watch as One Ton fell in behind the Luck and the Falcon.
"The Force is with us today,"